This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm your sometimes host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, on the show today, we have Jeff Cron from Reveloper, which is a company that helps individual landowners on the commercial side actually develop their properties versus a traditional sale to a developer.
Right. I feel like this is such a moment where a company like this, and I know there's a couple of them out there, obviously, but it's such a moment where these companies make a lot of sense.
Yeah, totally.
You're richer than you think, as Scotiabank says, if you own land in the lower mainland, potentially.
That's true. That's true for Adam because he owns land in Kelowna. Yeah, it's like, you're richer than you think. You're a lot richer than you think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Kudos to him.
Yeah, he had the foresight.
Let's hear it for Adam.
Yeah. He had the foresight to buy in Kelowna.
That's right.
Or maybe he just had the money. Well,
probably both. Yeah, exactly. But there was a great conversation with Jeff Cron. He kind of outlines the process, simplifying development for people that are not necessarily in the business, but want to take advantage of the true potential.
Exactly.
Of their land.
Exactly.
So what else do we got before we cut to our talk with Jeff Cron, Corey?
Well, we were talking about this before we hit record here. And one thing that seems to have stuck with a lot of listeners, or no, not listeners, but guests.
Yes.
Because they always tend to bring this up as a joke before or after the recording at some point in time, is my continued struggles and love-hate relationship with my Peloton.
Right.
Right. And I successfully snapped off the left pedal and somehow almost went head over heels on a stationary bike, if that's even possible.
Again. So you've now broken.
No, it gets better. But then this past week, I successfully snapped off my right pedal now. So I had to call the Peloton customer service line again and get that really awkward long moment of kind of like, you did what to what? How is that possible? And then the gentleman on the phone happened to log into the account to see that I did this on the left-hand side a year earlier, or maybe 2 years earlier now. That maybe this is Peloton's way of saying my pear-shaped body is just too fat for the Peloton.
Well, I don't know about that. You said you're now running.
I have to run now because I have no Peloton. I've ordered.
You're in exceptional shape.
No. When I go running, I have this like black tracksuit on and I'm running at such a slow pace. If there was another runner that's running in the Burke Mountain area, there's lots of forest. She's going to think there's a fucking, edit. She's gonna think there's like a black bear chasing her, right? Like that's what I look like. I look like a black bear running around Burke
lumbering,
Mountain. Lumbering around with my black tracksuit on and my black William Wright toque at 5:30 in the morning, like a black bear's on the loose.
The 5 a.m.
The 5 a.m. club, yeah. So the Peloton, so now they're sending me a new crank arm, they call it, with a new pedal on the right side. That it's just, they're probably just telling me like my pear-shaped body is just not meant for the Peloton.
I also feel like you're probably that customer where they're like, we've lost money on this deal.
Oh, they've lost money on me for sure. Well, I'll say they probably have actually broken even because like from time to time, I have to download an update. And when it downloads the update, it forces me to sign back into my account, which obviously like who remembers your Peloton password?
Yeah.
So I forget. So I get frustrated. So I buy another Peloton account. So I have three or four different Peloton accounts going all at $50 a month. So they're making money on me because every update I have to buy a new account because I can't remember my password from last time. So,
well, maybe we'll leave it there. Let's cut to our talk with Jeff from Reveloper. This was a great conversation.
Enjoy, guys. This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentara Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentara is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing, because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlin sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Okay, so we're here with Jeff Cron, founder and CEO of Reveloper. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Very, very good. Very good. Jeff, for our listeners, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I come from a background in engineering, consulting. I'm in construction, and then I got into development, real estate development. So yeah, my background is in engineering. We actually have a family company, which is was founded by my dad, which is Cron Group. We do so with that consulting. We do architectural, engineering, everything for all types of projects across Western Canada and actually into Toronto now. So we do a lot of consulting. I've been in the real estate construction and that whole industry for my whole life. I've been around it. So yeah, I know a lot.
Can you tell us about the transition from working with your family to starting Reveloper?
Yeah, so it actually started when I was kind of working in the industry and doing a lot of the engineering and a lot of the consulting, and I still do that as well. I noticed that a lot of times the guys that were coming to our office to just get projects going, or right, you had your major kind of your major legacy developers, right? They knew what they were doing, but you had a lot of guys that maybe owned a single parcel of property, or maybe they just had it in the family. Maybe they bought it, or they wanted to buy it, or just a number of different options, right? And then they asked, okay, what do we do on it? You know, the first step is, okay, what can I do on it? So you take it to the architect, and then you'd get some renderings, you talk to the city, then you take it to, you'd kind of talk to the real estate brokers. Okay, what can I do? Like, what can I sell it for? What can I lease it for? Right? And then what are my construction costs? And you kind of take this whole process. You'd manually take weeks, months, costs, right? These guys really didn't know what they were doing. So we were kind of running that process for them. And it would take a while because architects, you know, right, they're expensive. I know, because I was one of them. They were helping with that. So, and then it'd take a long time. And then at the very end, they'd be like, oh yeah, the project works or doesn't work. And then, okay, well, now what do we do? Right. So that's kind of where this came in. Cause I was like, well, we got to be able to help these guys. A lot of people who wanted to develop but just didn't have that backing. They weren't a multinational or just a large-scale developer. They wanted to do it, right? So they just didn't know how to. So that was more the transition into getting people and just allowing people to do that and make it easier. So, yeah.
It strikes me, especially with the zoning changes at the city of Vancouver and then now the provincial level, that the opportunities for a company like this are expanding dramatically. Can you break down kind of for the layman exactly what Reveloper does?
Yeah, so essentially, I would say we're a development service and platform. So we're like trying to allow anyone to simply and successfully develop their real estate. So we'll take that process, right, from start to finish, from the feasibility, which like that very first step, and then we'll take it all the way through from design, construction, all the way to lockup, sales, or leasing. Because the typical way was like, okay, well, you could do it on your own, or you could try and do it. You could sell the property to a developer, like a major developer who had it. But a lot of guys didn't want to sell, but they had underutilized properties, right? So that we would allow them to take it from start to finish and maintain control while also maintaining the profits that would come from doing this, right? So when I started to do a lot of the development, I got frustrated because there wasn't a way to kind of do it simply. And it was just very convoluting. And I came from the industry and I was like, wow, this is this complicated. I couldn't imagine someone else trying to do this who wasn't in the industry day to day, right? So, yeah.
So Jeff, if I'm a landowner, let's say I maybe have a piece of land that could be developed by itself, or maybe I've assembled a couple of pieces of land. I've been lucky to do that. I would come to you guys and say, hey, I have this land here. I'm not prepared to sell it outright to a developer. I want to reap some of the rewards of the upside of the development. Would you partner with these landowners through kind of like a joint venture idea? Is that kind of the proposal that you would help bring that land from the current state it is until it's delivered and the occupancy permit's been issued, and then you share in the profits with that through a joint venture agreement? Or how does the landowner benefit by your services?
Yeah, so there's a question. So there's a lot of, like, I've been involved and seen a lot of joint ventures, a lot of like just the typical joint ventures. Oh, sorry, where it was a 50-50 split or vended in the land or something like that. What I would tell a lot of people is that you didn't actually need to do that, right? So there was, what the value that the joint venture partner was bringing was not worth like the 50% split or something like that, right? Well, they're saying that they're bringing equity, but maybe they had enough equity in the land already. Maybe they had cash available, or maybe they had enough net worth or whatever it was, right? They could bring it in themselves and they just needed somebody to kind of take them through that whole process. I would say that we're not trying to be like that joint venture. We're kind of almost trying to be, we're more of a service to say, hey, we'll partner with you. We'll do it. We'll do that. And we'll share in the success of the development, but we can stage it. Well, we can phase it a little bit differently so that it's not that typical where a typical joint venture is like, here, you take control of the property. Like you guys run it. And at the very end, you just give me some money, which that's a passive type thing. Where we can say, hey, if you want more involvement, you want to see what's going on, you want more control, kind of like that, then we'll do that to kind of make it so it's like actually more of a service instead of just that conventional joint venture, which is, yeah.
So if I'm the landowner here and let's say we put a performer together and the cost is, you know, $7 million for argument's sake in development cost to get this from the dirt where we are to get into the townhouse row home development.
Yeah.
Am I as the landowner responsible to find or obtain that construction funding? Or is that something that you guys bring in? Or is there another capital partner that comes to the table? How does that play a factor?
Yeah. So our main focus right now is on kind of the commercial industrial side, because that's what we're focused on. That's what we're good at. We'll get into the other asset classes in the next little while. But anyways, that's just our main focus. So that's a good question. What you're asking about the financing and all that sort of stuff. So
yeah,
we'll actually run the pro formas. We run everything, right? So we can figure out, okay. And that very quickly, we do that. I'll say that we do that process very quickly. That process of self-starting that takes months. And can take cost. We can do that within a day with some of our software and our technology that we've built that grabs the data and does all the analysis automatically. That was one of the things that got me going on this tool. Like, I could simplify that process and make that just so that people would know what's the value and what potential they have, right? And then we'll run through it all. We'll take it to the different brokers. We'll figure out the finance. We'll figure out how much equity is there. What it can be a land loan. It can be a pre-construction loan, and figure out all those different options that we bring it to the owner with a kind of a ready to serve option instead of that whole process that can be very confusing and very time consuming. Right. So we wanted to make that so very simple that someone could be like, okay, yeah, here it is. I know what I can do. I can start on this right away.
So Jeff, then so me and you sit down, we get the performance together, we figure out how much it's going to cost to build this industrial strata project. We go talk to some commercial mortgage brokers. We try to get some loan to cost construction financing in place or whatever it is. That's my job as the landowner to kind of secure that financing. So then do you become like a fee for service builder at that point with these landowners?
Yeah. So So the first option is we look into whether the owner or whether the group of owners or investors, whoever it is involved on the property side, if they're able to do it. Because a lot of times I'd say it's an owner operator. They had the property. There's been a huge amount of land lift or areas on that where they have it. So first we'll look at, hey, can you guys do this? Do we want to do it by yourself? Right. And they say, yeah, we can. We have the ability, or we have, right, the net worth, whatever it is, through those types of loans that we'll need in construction. And we'll say, okay, that's the first option. But now, okay, we'll go down the next row. Maybe you don't. Maybe it's you just, the property has been leveraged a little bit more. You've taken out a mortgage or whatever it is on it. Then we can look into the option. Then it'll go up in terms of, then it would move up towards more of a, call it a joint venture agreement, where then it's okay, yeah, we can come in and provide security in terms of on that side. And then obviously then it would be more of a, the profit split would go up higher because we're coming, becoming more of a partnership in that sense. If not in the original case, then it's more of a, yeah, we're doing this all in terms of, and then we're kind of coming on alongside. So we'll take a percentage of the net profit of the project as well. So it's more, yeah, it's more of that. But because I always got, even though I came from the consulting background, I always got annoyed with the you know, the hourly billings, right? Because in a project, like similar to realtors, everyone gets paid when the project is sold or leased, right? Even the developer, the end user, it's not like, the, right? But that's when everyone makes their money. So that's how the same thing we do. Like we're saying, we're in it for, with, like we're kind of partnering, let's call it, alongside the entire project with you. So we'll make it, we're only going to make money, same thing if you guys make money too, right? So it's that same model as well.
So is there a waterfall then that gets incorporated into this? And for the listeners that don't know what a waterfall is a lot of times in development, there'll be to try to align the developer's interests as best they can with the partnership or the investors in the project. There'll be a waterfall where the more money the project makes, then the more money the developer makes. As the profits increase, that way it kind of aligns the interests. Is there a waterfall dynamic?
Yeah, they would work to this then. There is a waterfall, exactly. Yeah, there are different options in that way, or they can do more conventional. We'll structure it to make it work, whatever, right? It can vary a huge amount based off of the involvement and things. So, and then one of the ways that I got frustrated with was that, so like when I was doing the first, sort of development, I was saying how hard it was, right? And how kind of,
yeah,
just how confusing. Like I was like, I had a background. I could go to like an engineer. I was an engineer. I could sign off on the drawings. I could go and talk to the people who have done it. I could talk. I had all these connections. Like, man, this is the hardest thing I've ever done. So then even that, I was like, okay. And I was like, well, how do we control the process, right? As well as going through it. And I was like, okay, there was nothing there that, you know what I mean? Like there was no way to kind of see what was going on, like the pro formas and the lease rates and all that sort of stuff. I'm like, keep everything in a single place. So that's where we built the platform, which was like, okay, everyone can see what's going on. So like in the project, it was like a live update to up-to-date kind of status of the project, which have all the latest financials, had all the live site photos when it was under construction, pre-construction, just a single platform that could connect everybody, if you wanted to invest in this project, you could see the investors could see all their returns as they were live going on instead of like this yearly update, or they didn't know what was going on and spreadsheets being thrown all over the place and documents, just this random array. And then at the end, everyone was like, oh, I guess we kind of, you know what I mean? They didn't really know what had happened, but they made up money. So they were kind of happy. right?
So no one complains. Exactly. No one complains about the checks when they show up.
Exactly. So
just a big abracadabra. Here's a bigger check than you put in. Yeah. Jeff, can you maybe speak to some projects that you guys have already done, or some notable projects you've already done that maybe we would recognize?
Yeah, we've done some projects in Abbotsford. We did one on the First Nations project there, and then three industrial buildings, like small bay units. We've got some other ones that are in progress in Brentwood Bay there that is coming on, which is going on now. Working one on the island as well.
So primarily it sounds like it's more like industrial focused at this point. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, because I come from more of the industrial side and commercial side. So when we were doing this, even when you're trying to sell properties, right? You have your industrial brokers, or you have your, right, you guys would know, you have industrial brokers, you have your real, you have your commercial brokers, and you have your residential, right? And then taking a residential guy and trying to move him to to an industrial side is very difficult. Industrial to a residential is very difficult. It's a completely, even though you're selling something, it's very, very different.
Totally.
And the nuances in industrial is that there are nuances, but it's simpler and it can be done. We're trying to use the technology to try and simplify a lot of the process that we do on the feasibility, because we do some pretty interesting and cool stuff with AI and stuff on the feasibility side, where we go through and use GIS data to kind of find all these properties And analyze them like instantly instead of that. So that was our focus, was just to do it on the industrial side first, because that was kind of the simplest, and then eventually get that into the kind of multifamily or different asset classes. But industrial is kind of the main focus, because that was the easiest one to do with the least amount of variables to kind of make it simpler and to analyze.
So you guys are obviously looking at it sounds like various projects throughout Vancouver Island, maybe Lower Mainland, maybe even beyond that. Is there a particular market in in BC where you're getting more inquiries from, or I guess the flip side to that, where you guys are focusing on?
Yeah, it all depends on. So like some of the hotter markets are obviously the Surrey market, right, where they have Campbell Heights, and there's a big industrial zoning and push there. And then even as you start to move out on the industrial side, there's not as much demand across the river. Like in Vancouver, obviously it's being pushed more out to the east. And then things from Surrey are starting to go from Burnaby to Surrey to now to Langley and Abbotsford, and even out all the way out to Chilliwack, as just land and stuff becomes more scarce. So it's kind of what I think what makes our things unique, is that we can kind of look into all these different areas very quickly, like that feasibility report I was saying that we can do and pretty much instantaneously and give a full site plan. That's kind of what we wanted to focus on, and be able to do that across multiple different areas and zones to kind of find and help. Yeah, just underutilized properties or properties that, right, whether they have an existing building on them, whether they don't, or whether they're a blank prop, right? There's just a ton of different areas, right? And people don't know what they had. So we wanted to show them what could be done instead of just not knowing and just kind of leaving it, because, right, oh, it's easier just to leave the status quo, but then they're missing on the huge potential that they didn't even know about. So
the idea of the program that you guys offer is trying to help landowners extract the development potential and potential development profits out of their land versus selling the land outright to a developer, and then them just being, you know, just having a traditional development land sale. Do I have that correct?
Yeah. So that's a good point. I would say that there's the option of selling, right? Right, so those guys would sell to a developer or to another property who would want to do it. And then they're going to go out and do their thing, right? They could develop it. Or there's also the option where, like, there's just a property, like maybe it's been in the family, they've had it for 20 years, let's say, for example, or it's a business, they operate a business on it. And they're not even interested in selling it, for example, right? They're just, maybe they have a new tenant in there, it's tenanted or something, but we can look at those properties and be like, okay, yeah, you don't have to sell it, but you know, like this parking lot here is very underutilized, and you could build another 30,000, or like your yard space. And we'll look into all those options and be like, okay, oh, I didn't even know I could maintain control of this property while also increasing the value of it and the cash flow from it. Or if they want to sell it and development at the end and make more money, that's another option too. We're just like, so we're going after people who may be looking at selling, or maybe they had no option of ever selling. They just wanted to keep it in the family or keep it in their business, right? We're just making them be aware that, okay, there's potential here, because we can find and extract that. You can keep your operations, but right, you can utilize some of these underutilized, underdeveloped areas.
So you ideally have like a bespoke type approach to land based on depending on where it's located and the potential value to it, that you can sort of like bespoke a opportunity for these landowners versus a traditional, versus having like a same model that has to apply to all land.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, it sounds like you've almost exclusively focused on the industrial space. Where do you see the opportunities next? Is it multifamily? Like I was actually, when we were got on the call, thinking more about kind of small scale residential projects. Do you see any opportunities there?
I think with a lot of, yes, I do. We thought about that a lot because of obviously the new kind of the legislation that allows infill and more density, right? So you have a lot of, it's the same sort of thing, the same sort of model, I would say, just in a different kind of asset class, where you have a lot of properties and they're not a huge multifamily building, let's say, for example. They could be, but maybe they're just a three to four unit townhouse infill or an infill, like such projects like that. Where, right, the property owner is not they have it, but they're not an experience, then that process is equally as daunting, whether you're building it's almost as equally as daunting when you're building a big multi-story project or just a five-unit townhouse, right? So I think there's a big opportunity there in that residential space, and then also in the multifamily as well. And then I would say in different asset classes that are adjacent to industrial, which could be which are self-storage, which comes along with, as you build more residential, you need more self-storage as you get, right, because you try and increase the density, people need more units. So that's an industrial base, I would call it as well. And then obviously you need more commercial. It all kind of, it all rolls together. As you build more residential, then the demand for the other stuff increases as well. So yes, there's definitely a big opportunity there to help those sort of property owners and people who in that space. So yeah.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate you taking your time today. We know you're a busy guy there, but before we let everyone go, we got a six pack of lighthearted questions we ask all of our guests. Do you have just a few more minutes for us today?
Of course.
Number one, Jeff, favorite vacation spot?
Favorite vacation spot. I'm actually just going to head to Phoenix. So I got to see Phoenix.
I feel like I've talked to three or four people in the last couple of days that are heading to Phoenix.
Everyone's going there. What's going on in Phoenix right now?
I don't know. I guess it's
they just lost a hockey team.
I was like, is everyone going there just to kind of remember the Coyotes?
To get the last, I guess, yeah. To say goodbye to them, I guess.
everyone in Phoenix is trying to buy Utah Yeti jerseys, I'm sure. All right.
Is it Yeti?
They haven't come out. So what they did is they went and registered six different names. One of them being like Utah Hockey Club, which is kind of the fallback if they don't have a name yet.
Yeah.
But other names were like the Mammoths, the Yetis, the Ice, the Venom, the Blizzard. Blizzards, I guess. Blizzards. It'd be really awkward if like you had like a Stanley Cup final and you had like the Colorado Avalanche against the Utah Blizzards like in June. That wouldn't work, I don't think. So yeah, they haven't picked a name yet, but I'm going to go with the Utah Yetis. I'm going to throw my hat in there.
The Utah Yeti, that's good.
The Utah Yetis. All right. All right, Jeff, next question up. You've unfortunately done something terrible. You found yourself on death row, but you're allowed the chance for one more meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
I'm going to go with some Maui ribs.
Oh, there you go.
Maui ribs. All right. Favorite band?
Favorite Jeff. Band. Ooh.
Or something you're listening to right now that everybody needs to know about.
My wife listens to way more music than I do, so she curates all my music when I'm in the house. But I would say I'm more into a lot of audiobooks. That's my main, and a good book that I'm reading right now, which it's talent is overrated. So that I guess that's my recommendation.
Leads us into our next question. Then was, do you have a book recommendation? So let me get it straight. So we're going to call your wife after to ask her what your favorite band is, and your book recommendation is Talent is Overrated. Who's that by?
I can't remember the author off the top of my head now because I don't have the book in front of me. But
I don't think we've had that one before. That seems like an interesting book.
It is a very interesting book. Yeah.
Is the general thrust hard work prevails or what's the?
Yeah, the general thrust is that we think that people that were born into great, that were super great, maybe had some an innate born talent in them, right? But it's saying that it's kind of, that's not the truth when you look into like a lot of the different athletes and let's call them even like Beethoven or any of that sort of stuff. It was actually that practice and that dedicated practice that they did over the 10 years from like whatever it was that got them to that point. So yeah.
So it's like they say, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
That sums up the book, but there's some more.
Hey, thank you, coach.
There you go. There, mic drop. I'm done. All right, Jeff, next question up here. It's a Friday afternoon. It's sunny. You maybe had a few glasses of your favorite beverage and someone shoves a karaoke mic in front of you. What song are you singing?
I guess we're going with Sweet Caroline.
Oh, that was quick.
Well, that actually leads, man, it's like you've got these in advance, which you haven't. But I feel like I always hear that at Rogers Arena. Are the Canucks going to win the Stanley Cup or when are they, what round are they exiting this year?
This year, I have to be a believer. So I have to say that they're going all the way this year, right?
Okay. So 2024
is the year that Canada brings home the cup. Exactly.
I think that's the third or fourth person now that's guaranteed the cup here. The only one who didn't is we had Josh Gilardi on last week who was going for the Dallas Stars, which is understandable.
Oh, but, yeah. He was voting with his head, not his heart.
Yeah, yeah. But so we have four guarantees here now. So Jeff, you're the first fourth person we've had on the program to guarantee the cup this year.
Exactly.
So in the event that we don't and the riot ensues, the four guarantors of the cup will probably be on the look. They'll be looking for you guys. So you guys got to be careful there. Jeff, for all of our listeners that want to find out more about the great programs you guys have over there at Reveloper and stuff like that, how can they get a hold of you?
They can just go to our website at www.reveloper.ca. And then reach out to us directly through there. And we'll make it easy for you.
Fantastic. Thank you again for your time, Jeff. Yeah, that was great.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
There you have it, folks. Our interview with Jeff Cron of Reveloper.
That was a great conversation. Like I said, I feel like this is such an interesting moment for a company like Reveloper.
Yeah, totally. I think there's a lot of landowners out there that probably have maybe owned their land for a long period of time. And there's a ton of equity that's built up in that land, which it sounds like through the programs that can help educate the landowners, potentially what you can try to do by getting some of that equity out, or maybe they create a partnership with them, but actually benefit to be from the profits of the development versus necessarily just selling the land to the developer and letting them enjoy the windfall.
Yeah. And the other kind of interesting component is the various approaches that they take, right? It's like, okay, you can get the financing. We can come in and play this role. You can't get the financing. We can come in and play this role.
Yeah.
Bespoke, as they say.
Yeah. No, it's kind of like that's kind of the suits you get made. At Baroni there. You get your bespoke Baroni suits. Hey. Well, trust me, if you want to own a bespoke Baroni suit, you better keep the profits from the development. Otherwise, you won't be buying bespoke Baroni suits.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So what else do we have before we cut for the day, Corey? I guess we have William Wright commercial.
Yeah, if anyone wants to if you wanted to actually do sell your development land and not develop it yourself, you can give us a call at our Vancouver office, 604-428-5255. You can visit our website, williamwright.ca, find all the listings and sign up for the latest and greatest news. Or you can fire me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. Always love hearing from listeners, good things, bad things, make fun of me on my Peloton, whatever you want. Fire those emails off. Always try to respond as quickly as I can.
Okay. And of course, all these episodes also live at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, where all things real estate related live, including the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast and the back catalog. So head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And I think that's it.
Yep. See you next week, guys. Another great episode coming to you.
Take care.
Subscribe today.